Good morning. This is Glenn. And Glenn, don't know my name. Something's wrong with my pot. There we go. And I'm sorry I cut the sound down. All of a sudden I get a yell from out in the lobby. Where'd the sound go? Well, I was cleaning. I was de-COVIDing. And I pushed the little button down. So sorry about that. Well, I hope you're having a good morning. We're going to do sports marathon today. Everything we do today from right now till after Swap Shop's off is going to be about sports. And we're going to have an interesting thing because I have an interview coming on with Gary Tuttle. And Gary is one of those runners. If you're as old as I am, or even slightly younger than I am, you'll remember that in the 70s and 80s, the West Coast owned distance running. I mean, owned it. There were people out there. Prefontaine, he was up in Washington. I'm struggling right now to remember all the people that were famous, very famous distance runners, Boston Marathon people. And anyway, we're going to interview Gary and talk to Gary about being part of that huge California West Coast phenomena where if you were a distance runner in the West Coast, you were winning. That was basically it. And I cannot remember the name of all those people. You'll remember the names when I finally get them. We'll talk about what it's like to run. Well, Gary ended up, I think, his best finish in the Boston Marathon, and he claims not to be a marathoner, but he followed his girlfriend out to Boston just to give her support, and she was going to run in the marathon, and he decided, oh, what the heck, I'll run in the marathon too, and he ran in the marathon, came in second. Not a bad outing for just thinking, and we have all sorts of interesting tales. I'm sure he can tell us some stuff about Boston. Boston's always been one of those events that I watch on TV. I don't know why it's fun to watch people get more tired and sometimes puke and sometimes do other things sometimes just pass out. It's interesting though, because the ones that win it are in such terrific aerobic shape. I'd love to be there. I got to talk to Gary about how he got in shape like that. And matter of fact, Gary has one of the highest amounts of oxygen. He maintains oxygen better than most people. They can test you, and it's VOI, I think, is the name of the acronym that explains it. Well, anyway, they can test you and see how much oxygen your body is absorbing and can absorb while you're exercising, and his is almost as good as anybody's. It might be, at the time that it was tested, it might have been the highest number that they had ever tested. I think it's in the 80s, like 84, 85, and I think the highest they've ever tested was right at 90, and that was just amazing. I read in one of the articles that I read getting ready for the show, I read that a cougar has this rating of 200. So it's not as good as some animals, but it's way better than the human animal, the Gary's numbers. So we'll talk about that with Gary, and maybe he'll set me straight on exactly what it's called. I'm sorry, I'm kind of slipping up here. But we'll have some trivia today. I'm going to talk about basically all sorts of sports you've not really followed. You know, I've got badminton trivia. I've got general trivia about sports that you don't normally follow. I've got soccer trivia. Now, where I looked it up, it was called football trivia. So it was the place that I looked it up must have been in Europe. I have some very little bit, but a little golf trivia. I have a little tennis trivia. And let's see if I have anything else that you might be. Oh, I have bowling trivia. And I have, then I'm going to go in after I talk with Gary. I'm going to talk about marathon trivia and also track and field trivia. So we're going to have all sorts of fun today. And I hope you'll stay with us right through Gary's interview and into Swap Shop, which is where we're going to talk about other track and field trivia. So it's going to be a good day. I was up till 1 o'clock getting all this ready. I met Gary. I met Gary when I was out at my son's vineyard out in California. Gary lives in Ventura, which is, 15 miles, maybe 20 max, from Ojai, which is where my son lives. And Gary is very close friends. Matter of fact, coached with my son I'll have to ask him the name of the high school where they both coached. As a matter of fact, I think they coached together. They may have coached one of the sports together, and we'll talk to him about that. But Gary and his wife, Ruth, are great friends I don't know how great, but they're good friends with my son and my daughter-in-law. And we'll talk to him about that, talk to him about the 3 or 4 hours I spent drinking wine at the vineyard with Gary and his wife, Ruth, and we had a good afternoon. And we'll talk about... I'm going to ask Gary because I read somewhere that on one of the Boston marathons, I think he's been in 3 or 4, on one of them he enjoyed running and drinking beer while he was running the marathon, and I think he still finished fairly high. So we'll talk about that. Anyway, we'll have good sports trivia today. And I'm not really going to ask people to call in, but if you want to call in, you're welcome to. The number here is 740-383-9944. We have no prizes for trivia question answers. So if you want to call in and ask a question or respond to a question, now don't forget, we have a 30-second delay. So I may be asking the question, and we may already have the answer before you call in. So that's why I don't usually ask for people to answer these trivia questions. But we'll be glad to talk to you about whatever interesting subjects you want to. I'm not up on all the local political stuff, and Scott went over that earlier in his show, so I don't ask me that stuff because I don't know anything about it. I know I was a politician, but the stuff just came out in the paper, and I have not looked at any paper or read any stuff online about the local problems that we're having right now. Anyway, let me ask you the very first trivia question that I have. I think this one's interesting. And when I was in the U.S. Army field band, every lunch period, a bunch of us would go down to the recreation room, and we played table tennis, or ping pong, as people call it. Ping pong is a brand name. Table tennis is what its real name is. But we would play table tennis for the hour lunch before going back and doing our rehearsals. I love table tennis. Now, I had to quit table tennis when I found out my eyes were not too good. I also had to quit racquetball at the same time because you can get hit pretty hard with a racquetball if you don't know where it is. So you need to watch that. But anyway, do you know that the table tennis or the ping pong ball is one of the two lightest balls used to play any sport? Guess how much it weighs. It weighs 0.1 ounce, 1/10 of an ounce, or 2.7 grams if you're if you do that gram thing. But 1 ounce, and that's what the we used to use Helix balls, Helix 5-star balls. They were supposedly the best ball made at the time and had the best bounce and everything. But the ping pong ball. Now, later on, I have questions about. There's another ball that's just as light, and I'll have to look that up. I don't have it right off the top of my head. But anyway, the ping pong ball is one of the two lightest balls. What do you think the heaviest ball is? Yeah, you're right. It's the bowling ball. The bowling ball, I think, is 16 pounds. Is that? Yes, it's 16 pounds. Or again, if you're one of those type of people, it's 7.26 kilograms. Do you understand that? I don't. Thanks to Jimmy Carter, we gave up on that, learning about that type of measurement. Anyway, but the bowling ball is not the only 16-pound ball that is used in sport. What other 16-pound ball would you say is used in sport? Yeah, you're right. If you were a lifter or we used to call the heavies in track, if you were one of the heavies, you knew that it was the shot put for the adults. Now, there was an 8-pound shot put for the kids, but if you were anything over 12, I think you had to throw the 16-pound shot, that was kind of challenging as a youngster throwing a 16-pound shot. I did it a few times. I didn't like doing it. I ran in track, but I was a sprinter. I was not like Gary Tuttle. I could, if I had to go farther than 400. Well, we had it called at 440 yards, which now is kind of 400 meters. If I had to go farther than that, I had to go find a place to throw up. I was terrible at the distances. Matter of fact, I used to get nauseated before just about every race that I ever ran. I didn't usually do any action towards feeling nauseated, if you know what I mean. If I had to run over 400, yeah, I have been known to go out behind the dumpsters. And I don't know why it affected me that way. And now, I did run the mile when I was in the Army, because that was part of the PT test, a physical training test. And when I was in basic training, if you maxed the PT test, in other words, if you got a perfect score on the PT test, they would give you a 3-day pass, which was almost unheard of, especially in basic training. The only thing that I did not max in basic training was that monkey bar things. They didn't call it monkey bars, but you swing from one. It's like hand climbing a ladder. You know, you go from one rung to the next with your hands. And my hands just didn't take it very well. And so that was the only thing I did not max, so I didn't get my 3-day pass. It was interesting, and I used to remember the guy's name, but I don't remember it anymore. He was from Chicago, who did max it, and they gave him a 3-day pass. We never saw him again. He must not have liked basic training. Now, they may have caught him and brought him back, but we never saw him again in his group of people. Well, we can have a phone call. Let's go and see who's on the phone. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Yeah, Glenn, that's called the horizontal ladder.
Oh, thank you. That's what that's called? I hated that. It would tear my hands up. And
I went through it, too, I was in the Army 8 years, so yeah, because it would put bushers on you.
Yeah,
and they didn't care. They didn't care.
No, absolutely not.
If you fell off of it, you got back on it, did it again.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what I did. I fell off of it a couple times.
Six down and six back or something like that.
Something like that. For some reason or other, that was horrible for me. There were guys that was easy, but not me.
we had to run the mile too. And
yep. Of course, 6 minutes, I think, was max for the mile back then.
Had your combat boots on.
Yes, and a pack sometimes. Now, we did, I don't think I did when I was taking the PT test.
We never run it with the pack because we was always running against the other platoons.
In competition. Yeah. Now, did you have to go through the obstacle course where you crawl underneath the live fire?
Yeah,
that was kind of interesting. I had a guy next to me that panicked and stood up and started running. He was kind of squatted over, but he stood up, and Drill Sergeant Sims ran out onto the field and knocked him to the ground so he didn't get killed. But they told us afterwards that the shells were going over our head, even if we were standing up. But
every fifth round was a tracer.
Yeah, so, you can see it. Yeah, yeah, kind of fun.
I just wanted to tell you.
Well, thank you. It's parallel bar. What is it called again?
The parallel ladders.
Parallel ladders. Yeah. Okay.
You can call it the parallel bar. Sure.
Okay. I guess we can call it, now that we're out, we can call it anything we darn well please.
Call it a piece of junk.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for calling in. I appreciate the information. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. That's what we do here at WWGH.
Ted,
we,
did you know Marion, Ohio is the popcorn capital of the world?
No, Scott. I didn't know that. Could you get me some?
I don't have any at the moment.
Some capital. Does anyone have a Chicken Places number?
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I almost forgot. We're back. I was trying to look up some of the West Coast runners. One of them I do remember from up north was Steve Prefontaine, who unfortunately passed away in an automobile accident when he was in his mid-20s, and that was just a terrible blow for those West Coast runners. But there were lots of them, and I'm going to, on the break, before we get a call from our interview, I will look some of those people up and give you the names, because I want to know if Gary actually ran with some of those people. I'm sure he did. Gary said in one of the interviews that he was not a marathoner. His distance was more the 10K and the 20K. Now, you know what that is. That's 10K is what? About 6 miles. 20K is about 12 miles. So it's a half marathon. And that was his distance. Now, I read one of his interviews, and he said one of the reasons he was good up until about the 20th mile. Now, you know the marathon is what? 26 miles, 360 yards, or I don't know. It's something like that. We'll ask it, Gary. But he was okay up to about the 20-mile mark, and then everything kind of fell apart for him because he only weighed 133 pounds, and he's 5'9", 5'9 and a half. And so he would run out of
body fat, basically, so he didn't have any energy. So we'll talk to him about a lot of things like that. So make sure you stay tuned, because we're going to do that in the next hour. He'll be on the air in about 45 minutes, so stay with us. All right, we already talked about the now what do you think the largest ball is used in sports? Well, that's pretty obvious, especially for those of us who are from Indiana originally. It's the basketball. It's 9.4 inches in across. The smallest ball is the table tennis ball or the squash ball. The squash ball is a little black ball, and it's kind of, it's not real, it's not as bouncy as a racquet ball. But boy, it stings when it hits you. I played a couple games of squash back when in my racquetball days, and it stung almost more, I think, than the racquetball, because the racquetball is a little bit bigger and it would absorb across your body a little bit more. But it always left interesting colored marks on your body. My wife would say, after I had showered or something came out and I was drying off, she'd say, "What is that green round circle on your back?" It was always a racquetball hit. What do you think the fast? Well, you know what they say the fastest sport is. They're always saying that highlight is the fastest sport, but it really isn't the fastest sport. The ball goes extremely fast. I think they wear helmets because I think there have been people killed playing highlight. But they call it the fastest sport because of the speeds the ball does achieve. Excuse me. But the badminton shuttlecock actually goes faster than the highlight ball. There have been times where they've recorded the badminton shuttlecock at 259 miles an hour. yikes. Now, I never played badminton that aggressively. I did love playing badminton, but I couldn't hit anything 259 miles an hour. I'd have to see how they got it up to that speed. Now, you do get a pretty long racket, so you're getting some leverage there. And I suppose with your wrist snap, you get a lot more speed. So I guess I'm not going to tell the Guinness Book of World Records they're wrong. They claim that the shuttlecock at 259 miles an hour is actually the fastest. Now, I don't know how much credit they give to what is it, the pentathlon, where they shoot a bullet or a projectile. I don't think that counts. It's not really a ball, right? Apparently, there have been very high speeds measured on golf balls as well. Still, highlight is called the fastest sport. They're going to hang on to that come hell or high water, right? There's another really fast field sport. It's called hurling. They don't give any information about that in this particular book, so I'm going to pass on going into that. Okay, now, fastest human beings. That's kind of interesting. That not including, you know, some these wouldn't include those runners who have mechanical assists. These are just natural runners. Runners and, you know, any speed event, like skiing, for that matter. Or now, they do mention skydiving is pretty fast, but terminal speed apparently is only 134 miles an hour while you're falling if your chute doesn't open to your death. I don't want to hit the ground at 134 miles an hour anyway, but that supposedly is approximately what terminal speed is for a skydiver in a free fall, 134 miles an hour. Downhill skiers have been known to go as fast as 155 miles an hour. So when you see them on the Olympics and they take a fall, that's got to hurt. So I think there have been skiers that have died from their injuries. Now, the good thing about skiing and falling, going that fast, at least you're falling on somewhat forgiving surfaces. They're not really snow surfaces. I suppose there is some snow, but by the time the really fast ones are going down the hill, that's pretty much ice. And so I would say that I don't want to do that sport. That sounds like a dangerous sport. If you want to figure out how fast people run, Bolt speed of 9.58 in the 100 was approximately 23.35 miles per hour. And so he's the fastest man supposedly, and his speed was 23.35 miles an hour. That's plenty fast. I couldn't catch him, and I was a sprinter. I used to tell my kids that I ran a 10-300. What I didn't tell them is that was 100 yards, not 100 meters. 100 meters is a little longer than 100 yards. A 10-3 is really good for, you know, that was when I was a young high school kid. In college, they put me into the middle distance, the 100, they put me into the 400 and the 220. I didn't run the sprints, the 100s. Now, I did run a 60-yard indoor dash one time, and I missed the world record by 7/10 of a second. But if you're running the 60-yard indoor, 7/10 of a second, you might as well be 4 miles away. But it's kind of fun to tell your kids that you missed the world record by 7/10 of a second. They never believe you anyway. Guess who the heaviest athletes are? Well, you got that right off the bat. Sumo wrestlers. They're pretty big boys. And now they don't list how big they do get, but several hundreds of pounds, each one of them. And they try to get bigger. That's crazy. I'm trying to do the other. I'm creeping into sumo wrestler range right now. All right. Did you know that wheelchair rugby was originally called murder ball? Wheelchair rugby. I had never seen wheelchair rugby. That'd be interesting to watch. One of the other games that I like to watch is Australian rules football. I think they make those rules up as they play. I don't think they have rules when they go out onto the field. If you watch it, it's just absolutely crazy. The deepest human dive, free dive, into water, was 328 feet. There are people that actually do that as a sport. They call it free diving, and 100 meters is 328 feet, and that's the deepest human unassisted free dive. They got nothing on whales. Whales go down to about 2.5 kilometers, which is that would be well over a mile. By the way, the high jump record. You know what the high jump record is? Now, I wasn't going to do any track trivia until later, but this happened to be on my list of things, and I really find it quite interesting. The high jump record right now is 8 feet 0.5 inches, just a smidgen over 8 feet, 8 feet 5 inches. Now a cougar, by the way, can jump 18 feet high. Okay, but who's counting, right? The long jump record, by the way, is 8.95 meters, which is 29 meters, 4.4 inches. And that was done a long time ago. A kangaroo jumps that pretty easily. So kind of interesting. The 29 feet, 4.4 inches, I think, Well, maybe that's the newer one, but I remember when they hit 29 feet plus was probably, what, 20 years ago? It was a long time ago. Now, we've already talked a little bit about badminton trivia, and badminton trivia, that we talked about the speed. Do you know the shuttlecock? They call it a birdie or a bird, and it must have 14 to 16 feathers, and they're usually from a goose or a duck, and they're from the left wing of the bird. I don't know why. Some crazy person must have decided that. 14 to 16 feathers from the left wing of a bird. What if it's a left-winged bird as opposed to a right-winged bird? I don't know. Badminton premiered as a full medal Olympic sport back in the 1992 Olympic Games in Barcelona. So it is a full-fledged Olympic sport and kind of fun to watch. It seems to be dominated by Asian countries. Maybe they play it more there than we play it here. The only time I ever play it is when I'm out on the seashore, right? And I don't do that anymore. I'm afraid that somebody might try to harpoon me. All right, let's continue on. Let's go to some golf trivia. Golf is the only sport that has been on the moon. You remember? Well, most of you don't remember, but those of us my age remember that one of the astronauts hit a golf ball on the moon to see how fire it would fly. I think it's still circling around the moon right now. it was Alan Shepard, and he hit it on February 6, 1971. Do you know what they used to call the original balls?
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marian residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 BC than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 BC, in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth. Spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
We're back, and I'm still trying to find some of those names of the people that were so famous running out on the West Coast, running the distance. I had it all lined up, and I thought I had it in my notes, and I apparently didn't run off all my notes, so I don't have all those names. So we'll ask Gary Tuttle, when I have him on. He's going to be on here in about a half an hour, and we'll talk everything distance running, and we'll talk everything. Gary did everything. Gary's been a coach. His father was a coach. Gary's been a runner. Gary's been a politician. He's been the deputy mayor of Ventura, California. He's done an awful lot, and he chased his girlfriend out to Boston Marathon, to support her running the Boston Marathon, and decided he'd run it himself and came in second. Now, that's falling into success, but I'm certain he had a lot to help him do that. I mean, he had been running since he was in high school, which is an interesting story that we'll talk about. All right. Tennis. Do you know how long the longest tennis match in history was? And it was between American John Eisner and Frenchman Nicolas Manhunt. And it was at Wimbledon, June 22nd through the 24th, 2010. The first round of the match took 11 hours and 5 minutes, over 3 days. They did it over 3 days. It lasted so long, it was suspended because of darkness 2 nights in a row. Now, that's a long tennis match. I don't think I'd ever want to play tennis that long. The match was won by Eisner, 6-4, 3-6, 6-7, 7-6. And the fifth set was the longest set in history. And it lasted 8 hours and 11 minutes and had 138 games. Boy, how could your legs stand that? I don't know. Anyway, that was the longest tennis match. Probably the shortest tennis match. It took just 20 minutes when Susan Tutt beat Marion Bandy 6-0, 6-0 at a Wimbledon tournament in 1969. Someday I'm going to go back. We had a coach, and I really can't remember his name. George, I remember was his first name. He was kind of old when I was at DePaul, and I was at DePaul back in 78 through 83. He was old then. He was probably my age then. But he had won Wimbledon doubles with a very famous other tennis player, and whose name I can't remember, of course, who had got into some shady business and was questioned about his ethics and stuff like that. And well, I'll go back over that someday when I can find out what his last name was. Maybe you know. And if you do, give me a call at 740-383-9944. All right. Boris Becker became the first unseeded player to win Wimbledon in 1985 when he was only 17 years old. That's kind of interesting. The very first unseeded player to win Wimbledon. Tennis was first played, guess how long ago tennis was played in the Olympics? The very first time it was played in the Olympics, I was very young. It was in 1896. But they took it out of competition in 1924. So it was played as a demonstration sport in 68 and 84 and then reintroduced as an actual event for the Olympics in 88. We're going over some of the sports that you don't usually hear trivia about. Bowling trivia. Bowling trivia is, now I'm sure there are a lot of bowlers out there that know some of this stuff, but did you know that there is absolutely no minimum weight for a bowling ball? Well, why would there be? Because the lighter the ball, the less likely you'll get a lot of pin action. So you really want it heavier. It's one of those heavy balls that we play with. I think they go up to 16 pounds, the bowling ball. The height of a bowling pin is the same distance as the circumference of the bowling pin. That's kind of interesting. So if you take a measurement and go around the bowling pin, it's the same around the bowling pin as if you measure it from the top of the pin to the top, to the bottom of the pin. Interesting. Now I'm starting to get people calling me from places I don't know. That's kind of interesting. Decline, Ohio. Have you ever heard of Decline, Ohio? I shut them off. Sorry. Did you know that bowling balls were made out of wood until the early 1900s? Made out of wood. I wonder how they could get them heavy enough. But they're all different weights of wood. So, did you know that bowling a strike followed by a spare, or vice versa, a spare followed by a spark, strike, strike for the entire game is called a Dutch 200. So in other words, if you do that for every frame, then it's called a Dutch 200. That's kind of interesting. I think when I used to bowl, and it was a long time ago, it was when I was in college, I think my highest score was 229. I think I averaged right around 170. So I wasn't a great bowler. I much like golf, I didn't mind participating, but I wasn't very good at it. Do you know what AMF stands for? It's very famous in bowling. AMF. You see it above the lanes. AMF is American Machine and Foundry. I did not know that. American Machine and Foundry is what AMF stands for. Now, how long do you think from the foul line to the head pin is when you're bowling the ball down the aisle, alley? How long do you think that is? It's just about the same as it is from home plate from the pitcher's mound to home plate. It's 60 feet long from the foul line to the head pin. Pitcher's mound to the home plate is 60 feet 6 inches. So I probably could roll a ball that distance much easier than throwing a ball that distance with any speed on it. Right? Have you ever noticed when they have the first pitch thrown out, a lot of those people can't throw that distance, and I'm probably one of those. Several years ago, I could have easily. Back when I was practicing with my son would usually, my youngest son, my eldest son, we used to say, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but we used to say he threw like a girl, which if you ever see my granddaughter throw a softball, there's nothing wrong with her throws. You don't want to be in the way. My eldest son was always embarrassing to watch throw. He played baseball a few times when I in Little League. But he found out pretty soon that his forte in sport was running middle distance. He was a very, very fast 800-yard runner. Okay. Let's see. I thought I had... Oh, yeah. Here's soccer. A lot of people play soccer anymore. And did you know the red and yellow card system? You know, they hold the yellow card up as a warning, then if you get a red card, you're out, right? It was invented by an English referee. His name was Ken Aston, and he was a headmaster at a high school in England. And he was the one that... invented that system. I guess that was a way of saying, okay, I'll give you one more chance and then I'm going to throw you out of the game, right? In the early history of soccer, team sizes ranged anywhere from 15 to 21 players. It was not until 1870 that it became standardized an 11-player team. And they play, they have standard 7-on-7s and 3-on-3 games now. Occasionally you'll see them playing those, especially for the younger kids. If COVID's going around, my daughter is a soccer coach, and I think they are down to either 7-on-7 or 5-on-5 because they just don't want to get so many kids out there on the field. And she does, she coaches, I think all the way up to about, she used to coach in high school teams. As a matter of fact, she was a coach of college teams too, but now she only coaches up to about 14 years old, I think. But she coaches both boys and girls. Matter of fact, my daughter was the very last female to start on the boys' soccer team at Athens High School. I was really proud of that. I remember one time I was walking by a bus.
of our opponent, and they were the game was over, and Athens had won, and my daughter had started that game and played very well. And I remember one kid telling his buddy, "Did you see that girl? She kicked the out of me." And I kind of quietly went, "Yeah, that's my daughter." That's the way I taught her. I was a terrible father that way. I used to go down when she was running track. I'd go down. She ran the 220 or 200, and she ran the 400, and she was a sprinter as well. But when she was running the 400 or running a relay, I would stand by the third turn and scream at her, "Break that girl's heart." I was a horrible soccer or a horrible father as a father coach, I guess. But we all enjoy what we enjoy. And it was kind of fun to watch my daughter run past people. So anyway, we're going to have Gary Tuttle on here in about 15 minutes. We're just about out of time here. I hope you enjoyed that. We will go over some trivia after the Gary's going to be with me for 45 minutes. And then after that, we're going to have a Swap Shop. But during Swap Shop, as we quite often do, we will have some trivia, and the trivia that we'll talk about during Swap Shop will be track and field and marathons. And I love watching track, and my wife does too, watching track and field and marathons on TV. Now, marathons can get a little long, but the nice thing about a marathon is you can turn it on, watch the start, everybody gets excited, and then after about half an hour, you can turn it off and then turn it back on in another half an hour, and it's just about, you know, another hour, you can watch the end. I think the average finishing time now is running right around 2 hours and 7 minutes, something like that. We'll ask Gary that question as well. And we'll have a good 45 minutes with one of the big names in distance running from the West Coast, Gary Tuttle, here in about 15 minutes from now. So make sure to come back. Thanks. Bye.
You're listening to WWDH Radio 107.1 FM, your place for politics. The only local Marion news coverage from the Republican National Convention, with conservative icon Phyllis Schlafly.
This is Scott Spears at the 2016 Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, at the Quicken Loans Arena, and we are joined by a conservative icon.